Have you ever noticed how politicians manage to just campaign absolutely everywhere?
Oh, all the time.
Right. Like they shake thousands of hands, they raise millions of dollars, but they never actually officially admit they are running for anything.
Yeah, it's this incredible open secret in American politics.
Exactly. Well, today, for you listening, we have a mission. We are taking a deep dive into a really fascinating, highly detailed document.
Super detailed.
Yeah, it's an analytical strategy report.
Right.
And it's dated August 17th, 2026.
Right.
And basically, it outlines the entire architecture of a potential Pete Buttigieg 2028 presidential campaign.
Which is wild to see laid out like this.
It really is. So our goal today is to just dissect the hidden gears of modern political strategy, using this specific report as our blueprint.
But before we really tear into this, just a quick note for everyone listening.
Oh, yeah, definitely a good idea.
Right, so we're looking at a highly political document today, and it touches on some very charged content in the current landscape.
Very current.
Yeah. So we just want to emphasize up front that neither of us is taking any sides here.
No, not at all.
We aren't endorsing any political viewpoints, candidates, or policies.
Right, no endorsements.
Right.
Our absolute only purpose with this deep dive is to impartially convey and analyze the ideas, the data, the arguments, exactly as they're laid out in this original source material.
Exactly. Just holding it up to the light to see how the machinery works.
Right. So let's set the stage here. The baseline facts as of this report, August 2026, Pete Buttigieg is not officially running.
Right, officially.
But he left the Department of Transportation at the end of 2025. He declined to run for a statewide race in Michigan in 2026.
Which a lot of people thought he would do.
Right. And yet he's currently sitting at 19% in national Democratic primary polling.
That's the Emerson poll, right?
Yeah, the Emerson one. And that actually puts him just ahead of Gavin Newsom, who is at 17%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and John Ossoff and AOC are both sitting at 13% in that same poll. Plus, he's out here doing these really long-form podcast interviews where he keeps saying he is more inclined than not to consider a run.
I mean, the sheer amount of infrastructure a politician can build without ever saying the actual words, I am running, is staggering.
It really is.
It's how a modern pre-campaign operates, right? Entirely in plain sight. It's an invisible campaign, but if you know where to look, the mechanisms are just massive.
And the numbers in this report really expose those mechanisms. Like between January 2025 and June 2026, his Win the Era pay pulled in $12.39 million.
Wow.
And they are sitting on $5.41 million in cash on hand.
That is a lot of cash to just have ready.
It is. And the document points out that this shows massive small dollar list activity. Plus, he isn't just sitting at home.
Right, he's doing the early state exposure thing.
Exactly. Traveling to campaign for Midwestern House races, he even popped into a Michigan 35th State Senate special election.
Which is so specific.
Right, just campaigning for the Democrat there. And he has this, what the report calls a go-anywhere communication model.
Yeah, the Fox News hits.
Yeah, showing up on conservative platforms, using Substack to articulate this
Yeah.
Post-Biden politics focused on everyday life.
We really need to look at how that operates functionally, though, because a PAC, like Win the Era, it isn't just a bank account holding money.
What is it then?
It is a data harvesting machine.
Right.
I mean, by getting involved in a highly specific Michigan 35th state Senate race, the organization is testing messages.
They're doing digital ads and stuff.
Exactly. They are running digital ads, capturing email addresses, figuring out exactly what specific rhetoric makes a 55-year-old independent voter click a link.
Wow.
They are expanding their audience reach and stress testing messages in real time. And they get to do all of this while operating under the guise of just being a former cabinet official trying to be a good party surrogate.
I look at this whole phase, and the best analogy I can think of is like a movie teaser trailer.
Oh, I like that.
Right. Because the studio's spending millions of dollars to build hype. They show you a few flashy scenes, they collect all this audience data to gauge the reaction, all without actually confirming the plot of the movie.
Yeah, it's all about hype and data.
But looking at the data from the report, a YouGov poll from August 2026 shows he has 74% fame and name recognition.
Which is huge.
Right. And 35% of people have a positive opinion of him. So with numbers like that, why bother with the shadow phase at all?
You mean why not just jump in?
Yeah. Why not just declare your candidacy, make it official, and leverage that 35% positive rating immediately?
Well, because in the physics of political campaigns, early recognition is a massive vulnerability.
Wait, really? Being famous is a vulnerability.
Oh, absolutely. A candidate with room to grow in the polls also has room to be aggressively negatively redefined by their opponents.
Oh, I see.
The absolute second a candidate officially declares they are running for president, they trigger this intense, hostile redefinition by every single opponent and all their super PACs.
Ah, so functionally, he's using the passy as a shield.
Exactly.
He's like building up an army behind a wall where nobody's actually allowed to shoot at him yet.
That is the core of preserving optionality. You build out your donor networks, you maintain your digital acquisition infrastructure.
Meaning collecting millions of phone numbers and emails.
Right, exactly. And you refine your messaging without taking the barrage of direct, formal opposition fire.
Because if you declare too early,
If you declare early, you have to spend millions of dollars just defending your own reputation before a single primary vote is even cast.
wow, yeah. But eventually, that shadow campaign does have to step into the light.
It does.
And the transition into an actual primary race requires looking at the battlefield. And based on this report, that battlefield has been completely terraformed since his 2020 run.
Yeah, the 2020 playbook is dead.
Completely dead.
Completely. And it's driven by what is probably the most consequential structural change in Democratic
In a
politics.
calendar.
The new DNC-approved calendar. The report notes that on August 15th, 2026, the DNC finalized the early window.
Right, and it's totally different now. South Carolina is now first on January 22nd,
Right.
followed by Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Michigan, and then Virginia.
And to understand why that sequence is an absolute structural earthquake for Buttigieg specifically, we have to look at the mechanics of what he actually did in 2020.
Right, because he used this intense, localized retail politics back then, like
Yes.
that grueling process of setting up super dense field offices and shaking every single hand in a freezing diner.
Exactly, the Iowa strategy.
Right, and it worked there. He won the most pledged delegates in Iowa, and he raised $24.8 million in just the second quarter of 2019 to fuel that.
But then he completely collapsed in South Carolina.
He did. The exit polls from 2020 had him in the low single digits among black voters there.
Right. And the structural shift of moving South Carolina to the very front changes the entire mathematical equation for a candidate with his specific history.
And we have to look at the reasons for that 2020 collapse, right?
Yeah, the report specifically notes the political baggage from his time as mayor of South Bend.
Right, the 2019 police shooting.
Yes, the shooting of Eric Logan by a white officer deeply intensified tensions with the black community.
And there was also the earlier removal of the city's first black police chief.
Exactly. Plus, Reuters reporting highlighted these mixed reactions to his anti-blight and redevelopment policies.
So those local controversies became direct national
They
liabilities.
really did.
But wait, playing devil's advocate here, it's 2026.
Okay.
Why can't he just lean on his massive federal profile now? Like just flood South Carolina with TV ads, outspend his rivals, and make up the difference.
Because he's not Mayor Pete anymore.
Right, he's a former cabinet secretary with a proven fundraising machine. So why doesn't money solve this?
Because under the new calendar, multiracial credibility is no longer something you can build over time.
What do you mean?
Well, think about 2020. A candidate could win a predominantly white state like Iowa, get a massive wave of positive media coverage, and then use that momentum to introduce themselves to black voters in later states.
Ah, I see.
But now, with South Carolina going first, multiracial credibility becomes a threshold requirement.
So if you bomb South Carolina on day one,
Donors panic.
right.
The media narrative instantly becomes this candidate cannot build a coalition, and your campaign basically starves to death before Nevada even votes.
Oh, wow. So South Carolina gives black voters immediate veto power over candidates who lack credibility.
That's the exact mechanism. And throwing millions at television ads weeks before a primary, that cannot manufacture durable relationships.
Yeah, and Ad Blitz isn't going to fix it.
Right. The politically relevant evidence of viability is whether a candidate has built genuine structural relationships with black elected officials, churches, civil rights organizations, local organizers, and long before 2027.
So treating voter outreach as like a last-minute communications project is an existential threat now.
Exactly. Under this new sequence, it just won't work.
Which means he really can't rely on the fresh new outsider mayor narrative to save him this time.
No, it's gone.
He has to run on his record as transportation secretary.
Right.
But looking at the breakdown of that record in the report, it is a massive double-edged sword.
Very much so.
Like, running on the DOT record is basically like being an IT manager.
An IT manager.
Seriously, think about it. You're an IT manager. Nobody throws you a parade when the office Wi-Fi works.
Oh, right. It's just expected.
Exactly. It's expected. But the absolute second the server crashes,
everyone in the building is demanding your head on a spike.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How do you build a presidential brand on filling potholes and regulating Boeing?
Well, taking your IT manager idea a step further, it's not just that they want you fired when the server crashes.
Right.
It's that your opponents will use every single server crash to prove you're fundamentally unqualified for the job in the first place.
Oof.
This is the ultimate test of the competence versus elite technocrat narrative that the report highlights.
So let's look at the assets first. The DOT assets are objectively massive in scale.
Massive.
The department's overview from January 2025 states the Biden-Harris administration announced $591 billion for more than 72,000 bipartisan infrastructure law projects.
Right.
And he oversaw nearly $4 billion in airline passenger refunds and reimbursements, plus roughly $225 million in penalties.
Which people really notice.
Yeah. And he handled emergency responses to major transport disruptions, like the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse.
Those are the assets.
But the liabilities are exactly those server crash moments, and they are glaring.
Right. The report points straight to the East Palestine train derailment.
Oh, yeah. He faced heavy, sustained criticism for not visiting that site until nearly 3 weeks after the February 2023 accident.
And then you have the FAA and Boeing 737 MAX X9 door plug incident.
And multiple massive airline meltdowns.
Exactly. And you have to add his personal brand problem to all of that.
Right. He has this highly elite background. Harvard, Oxford, Rhodes Scholar, McKinsey consultant.
This is the core tension of the campaign. Every signal of competence he tries to project can easily be weaponized by opponents.
To reinforce the elitist technocrat critique.
Exactly. If you handle a disaster like East Palestine by talking about supply chain logistics and regulatory spreadsheets,
rather than the human tragedy on the ground.
Right. Opponents will slice that up into a 30-second attack ad that paints you as completely out of touch with working class voters.
So functionally, he can't just wave a spreadsheet of infrastructure spending.
No, absolutely not.
He has to literally stand in front of a bridge that was closed for 10 years, cut a ribbon, and point to the physical concrete.
Right. He has to make infrastructure emotional.
That's a huge pivot.
It is the exact strategic pivot required. He cannot run on abstract managerialism.
No spreadsheets.
Right. To survive the McKinsey technocrat attacks, his competence has to be tied to material, visible outcomes.
So pointing to the repaired bridge.
Yes. Or pointing to the actual physical refund check a passenger received because the DOT tightened the rules on airlines.
Translating a technocratic bureaucratic process into practical future building that, you know, visibly lowers household costs.
Exactly. Proving the Wi-Fi works by showing people how much faster their specific download was.
I like that. But let's say he manages that tightrope.
Okay.
Let's say he survives the grueling new primary calendar, builds that multiracial coalition in South Carolina, and successfully sells his DOT record as material tangible competence.
That's a lot of ifs.
It is. But even if he does all that, he still has to face a general election field.
Right.
And there is a glaring demographic reality waiting for him. His old superpower from 2020, you know, being the young, fresh candidate, is completely gone.
Yeah, the generational lane is incredibly crowded now.
Because in 2028, he will be 46 years old.
Right. Which is no longer a distinctive advantage when you look at the potential rivals outlined in this analysis.
Who else is in that lane?
Well, you have Josh Shapiro, who has massive, moderate, and suburban appeal.
Right. You have Wes Moore, offering direct generational leadership with a stronger potential access to black voters. Plus, he has a military veteran background.
Okay, that's tough competition.
And you have Andy Beshear, who directly challenges Buttigieg on non-college, rural, and working class credibility.
Oh, wow. And when we look at the general election math they are walking into, it is daunting for whoever wins.
Absolutely.
The baseline map they are using is the 2024 election. The official results gave Donald Trump 312 electoral votes to Kamala Harris's 226.
Right.
And the strategy report references Pew and AP vote cast data showing deep Democratic erosion with non-college voters, younger voters, and working class voters.
That is a massive hole to dig out of.
So how do they dig out of it?
Well, this dictates the entire Electoral College strategy. The analysis outlines three arithmetically realistic paths to get to the 270 electoral votes needed to win the presidency.
Okay.
But based on BuddyGeek's specific profile, his infrastructure messaging, and his Michigan residency.
The Rust Belt path, right. Yeah. Exactly. The Rust Belt-centered path becomes the most logical focal point.
Let's break down the actual geography of that math for the listener, because it leaves absolutely zero room for error.
Go for it.
Okay, so you keep the 226 baseline that Harris won.
Right.
Then you absolutely must add Pennsylvania for 19 electoral votes, mm-hmm. Michigan for 15,
right.
and Wisconsin for 10. That adds up to exactly 270 electoral votes.
Exactly 270, not 271, not 272.
Exactly 270. If you are listening to this right now and you live in Pennsylvania, Michigan, or Wisconsin, imagine the bombardment coming your way in 2028.
Oh, it's going to be relentless.
For a campaign, banking entirely on an exactly 270 strategy
yeah.
is basically like trying to bowl a perfect strike in the 10th frame to win the tournament.
With a blindfold on.
Right. If a third-party candidate peels off even 1% in Wisconsin, the math collapses.
The risk is immense. Yeah. And the structural limitations of his specific coalition make it even harder.
Because he struggles with the working class.
Right. Just because BuddyGeek has a Midwestern brand and lives in Michigan, it doesn't automatically solve his demographic problems.
Right.
Midwesterner does not automatically mean white working class.
Right. His historic voting base is heavily suburban and college educated.
Exactly. So to execute that exact 270 strike in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, he has to win back the exact working class voters he has historically struggled to connect with.
Why not look south or west then? I mean, why is the Rust Belt considered the cleanest path if the margins are that terrifyingly thin?
Well, because the alternative is the Sun Belt path.
Okay.
And that means trying to win North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada to get to 275 electoral votes.
But that's harder.
The structural difficulties there are significantly steeper.
How so?
Well, the report pulls from Arizona's July 2026 voter registration data.
Okay.
And it shows Republicans at 35.39% of registrants, while Democrats are lagging way behind at 28.11%.
Wow. So that is a massive structural deficit before you even start campaigning.
Exactly. The Sun Belt path also requires incredibly high turnout among Black and Latino voters.
Demographics where we've seen shifting loyalties recently.
Right. So while the Rust Belt path has zero margin for error, his infrastructure message regarding rebuilding American manufacturing makes it his cleanest arithmetic route.
Got it. So zooming out, what does this all mean for you listening right now?
Right. What's the takeaway?
I think the biggest takeaway here is realizing how meticulously engineered our political reality actually is.
Oh, absolutely.
The next time you see a politician doing a casual 3-hour podcast interview, or you see a clip of them dropping by a local diner in a swing state like Michigan.
Remember the massive machinery we just unpacked?
Right. You aren't just watching a spontaneous conversation.
No. You are watching a highly calculated multi-million-dollar architecture at work.
Exactly.
You are seeing a specific media and digital pillar in action designed to test rhetoric, capture email addresses for PACs, and build an electoral coalition layer by excruciating layer.
Every single diner visit is cross-referenced with polling data and donor acquisition metrics.
Every single one.
It's wild.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's one tiny, easily overlooked detail buried in the organizational strategy section of this report that I just cannot stop thinking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I want to leave you all with it today. Under the security and integrity layer, the document explicitly mentions investing in deepfake monitoring and the rapid debunking of manipulated clips.
Yeah. Which is just a mandatory dark reality for any campaign operating in 2026 and beyond.
It is. But think about the paradox here.
Okay.
The cornerstone of this entire communication strategy is proving you aren't an over-rehearsed, out-of-touch technocrat.
Right. By being authentic.
Right. You do that by sitting down for long-form, unscripted, highly authentic podcast interviews.
Yeah.
You want people to hear your real voice, unedited, for hours.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens to our political process when AI deepfakes become completely indistinguishable from reality?
Oh, that's a chilling thought.
Right. If authenticity is your main weapon to win over working class voters, doesn't the ultimate authenticity play suddenly become the easiest possible thing for opponents to weaponize and fake?
Wow. It really forces us to question the very fabric of the information architectures being built around us.
Exactly.
I mean, if seeing is no longer believing, how does any candidate prove they are who they say they are?
It really does make you wonder. So keep questioning those architectures, everyone, because the movie teaser trailer might look incredible.
Right.
It might have all the right emotional beats, but the studio has an entirely different set of metrics for why they are showing it to you.
Perfectly said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.